This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. In the 1970s and 1980s, Argentina experienced a deep trauma that still resonates today. Tens of thousands of Argentines were kidnapped, tortured, and killed by the ruling military and security forces. Those who were never seen again were called, in English, the disappeared. In his new novel, The Sound of a Broken Chain, Argentine-born author J.D. Cortese takes readers back to the period in his country's history at a time that he lived through himself, in fact. The teenage protagonist of the novel become entangled in a political crisis, and as the story develops, a messenger from the future tries to warn them of more problems to come. Jorge, welcome to The State of Things.
Thank you very much, Frank, for inviting me and to talk about my novel.
Well, before we talk about the novel, talk a little bit about your experience in Argentina.
Well, I grew up in Argentina, and I lived through not one but two military dictatorships. And the second one, the one that deals with in the book, actually overstepped their boundaries and killed close to 30,000 people. And started with their enemies, the communists, the socialists, and then their families, and then kidnapped their children, give many of them in adoption. So there are not just those 30,000 people, but thousands and thousands of children who never knew who their parents were. And part of my extended family was part of the desaparecidos, up to 9 people. And that touched everyone. But at the time that we were living there, it wasn't that clear.
I was going to ask you, how did it touch you? Because there's a way in which everybody feels it, but if you're living in those precarious times, you don't talk
about
it.
When it didn't touch me at that time, I actually married a woman whose extended family was part of the desaparecidos. But the reality is that those were turbulent times. I mean, the government was obviously... my novel happens in 1978, which is at the height of the Soccer World Cup, which is played in Argentina. Argentina wins the Soccer World Cup. So the government is making enormous efforts to look good outside Argentina and to cover what they are doing. There were up to 400 detention centers where all these thousands of people were being disappeared. And in fact, my direct contact with this, and perhaps the genesis of the novel, is that one time I was crossing the street just across the National Congress in Argentina, and I was almost run over by a car run by the special police. They had guns outside, they were banging the car to make noise, and they almost killed me. 6 months later, I was in that same corner across the National Congress celebrating the victory of Argentina in the World Cup. And even at that point, I thought clearly, this is one crazy time, and if I had to travel back in time to fix something, it would be to this time. And I think that was the genesis, the seed of that novel that was for me for 40 years, literally. I started writing that in the last few years.
Well, tell us more about the novel, the storyline and the characters in it.
Yes, the story happens just at the time of the Soccer World Cup. The main character, Edgar Weston, is an expat. He's an American kid who is living in Buenos Aires and is a high school student. His best friend is what we will call a conspiracy theorist. He's trying to infiltrate the military and expose their crimes. So he knows more about what's going on there. And Edgar meets a girl, Mariana. He falls for her. But Mariana is a member of one of those organizations, armed revolutionary organizations that are taking position against the government. Many of them were disappeared and killed. And she's kidnapped by the military. But at the same time, and this is the second part of the novel, he receives a message from the future. And the messenger is particularly clear that he has done something wrong at that time. He doesn't know what it is. But if he doesn't fix it, he will have to kill him. So that sets up the adventure of Edgar, who then doesn't really know if any of his actions will be good or bad, but at the same time has to rescue his friend and his girlfriend from the military.
I wonder if you can read for us and help set it up for
us. I will read something at the very beginning first. This is where we know a little bit about Edgar and his life. He's at the high school at that point. Mr. Fernandez Sousa, finally losing patience with his solitary expounding of the school rules, pounded the desk and signaled the door. His straight arm was shaking like a compass pointing north. I was being sent home as if I had a family there to punish me. He couldn't possibly understand how alone I was. I had been orphaned from my country by my mother's death and my father's job, and adopted by Argentina while I finished high school. Living abroad, I lost many things, like my relatives, so scattered in my country up north as to make it too expensive to contact them. And I lost my few friends from before I started to travel with my father's projects, mostly because they had turned less interesting after undergoing puberty. I even lost my name, Edgar Weston, as I was quickly renamed Edgardo by my peers, and even now I feel awkward saying the English version. But there were also things I got in the trade for a country that wasn't my own and shared our freedoms only in appearance. I became fluent in Spanish, inspired by stories about an Argentine grandmother, and didn't look too foreign in a city full of tango-thirsty tourists and third-generation European immigrants. And I was free to roam the world alone, a street Kerouac, thinking by myself without the weight of nearby elders. Some would say that this was dangerous, but I relished the new adventure of each day. I accepted my punishment with a sense of being in the wrong, something the principal clearly loved and which made him smile, and I left his office trying not to smile too much myself. After bragging for the 10th time about my knowledge of everything, a reprimand was in order. What I didn't know was that the punishment for showing off my brains was going to be much greater than being sent home. I was going to be presented by destiny with a puzzle no human IQ could solve.
Author J.D. Cortesi reading from his new book, The Sound of a Broken Chain. So tell us how Edgar came to be in Argentina.
Well, his father works for a pharmaceutical company in the United States. And so he travels to Argentina and lives part of the year there. I have met people who live an expat life in Buenos Aires. And so that inspired me. Actually, some friends of mine were in that position. It may sound crazy that people will stay alone in the city, but that was not unusual. And kids will go to high school and still keep their parents in their multiple travels outside Argentina.
Yeah, and what's wonderful about your novel is the way it sets up these themes for people going through political crises like this, asymmetries of knowledge. We really don't know exactly what's happening, but clearly something is wrong. And so this sense that something is wrong, but not knowing the precise facts, and displacement, not being where you're supposed to be, being moved around, right?
He feels, as we all do, foreigners in another culture when we live as an expat. I was an expat in China at some point. And you feel that you are not totally part of the culture, but you want to be. You also feel, like he does, that he doesn't completely understand the culture. He also lives in a very difficult moment that I don't think anyone can understand. And we have moments in the novel that you realize that people are being lied to by the government and they have a views of reality in a very complex society that were not close to what was going to happen.
And tell us about his friend who lives there.
Julian Imeyer lives there. He's a typical Argentine. I said he's both affectionate and arrogant, like most people from Buenos Aires, who are a little bit like New Yorkers to some extent, in my experience. And he is in a quest. He wants to really expose the military. He knows all these strange theories at the time about them, and has some very dangerous friends, both in the military and the church, which was involved also with the military. And he's sort of pulling what Hunter S. Thompson did. So he tries to become one of them, become friends with them, and learn about them. That will get both of them into considerable trouble, and at some point they will be taken by the military and we had to escape the tension.
Yeah, and it points out this interesting problem of asymmetrical information, right? What the military junta knows, something is going on very clearly. But as you say, you describe him as a conspiracy theorist. He looks a little bit like a wacko to everybody on the outside because he begins to propagate details that he can't possibly know. And that's where you start getting into trouble. That's the Hunter S. Thompson thing, right? I mean, it's like he was right about the Nixon administration, but some of the language made him look a little bit over the edge.
Yeah, and the culture was, what happens in that situation is that the culture is lied so much that you don't really know what the truth is. Yeah. So every new thing that will happen will be interpreting these very wild theories like the international groups that are dominating the country or secret societies, and all that was true at that point.
Down to the other side, and you said you've experienced this, where people simply denied it was going on, right?
Nothing was happening. That is true. I come from a conservative family, and there was a lot of denying, especially people closer to the church. And at the same time, that other friends of mine were in hiding, and I had to hide people in my house because they were persecuted for just being members of a socialist party.
So maybe I could ask you to do another reading for us.
Yeah, I will read. This is in the middle of the book. And for a while, Mariana comes back after being kidnapped, but then she's taken again.
And she's a member of an actual...
She's a member of the Montoneros. That was an armed organization that has this height. And they did lots of bombings and kidnappings and ransom requests. So they were a dangerous group, but the government focus on them, killed probably 5,000 members over those years.
And suspected members, and suspected members of their families. And
those were times that just having the name of one of those persons in your address book will be dangerous.
Right. So you can read for us now. This is Mariana.
Yes. The rest and the shower had made Mariana seem corporeal. She had borrowed a sweater of mine, which reeked of the lavender cologne my father had sent me for my birthday. For the first time, and forever after, I will love the smell of lavender. She sat on the bed with me, covering her pain arm with the other. We both needed each other, and I wasn't going to leave her alone. Never again. How did you get involved? Mariana looked at me, those brown eyes, the way they shone. They were hypnotic. There was no choice for me, she said. They killed my father, my older brother, and took my aunt and her daughter. I couldn't stay still. Your mother, didn't she stop you? Her? No way. She will go down with the ship, she said and smiled. But maybe the ship is already underwater and we're all dead, though we still think we can come back. So it's a vendetta. Mariana smiled again, and I forgot for a moment my own seriousness. With so many of us being from Italy, she said, sure, it's a family vendetta. That was true enough, and I didn't know what to say. I put my arm behind her head before saying what I was thinking. Why don't you come with me? I am with you, Edgardo. I came to you. I meant to the States. My father can get you a passport, a visa, something. Me in the United States? No, this is my country. The way she said Estados Unidos had a hint of anger, enough to reveal the ever-present ghost of the left behind her revolutionary quest. We, the capitalist pigs. It was sad, but I was the enemy too.
There it is, J.D. Cortese, reading from his new book, The Sound of a Broken Chain. You have enough in here. There's a love interest, there is political intrigue, political violence, and then you add this sci-fi, this kind of time travel component. Tell us about that.
That was not my intention at the beginning. I was actually writing a different book, in a space opera, and I thought maybe as a break I could write a romantic young adult book about this period of time, which I always found fascinating. And I started doing research maybe a year later at the New York Public Library, the Schwarzman Library. And I discovered that a month before the game start, there was a meteorite strike in a mountain, remote mountain, between Argentina and Bolivia on a Friday. And then another one on a Saturday, the next day. Which obviously didn't make any sense to me. It can't be that two meteorites would hit the same mountain twice in 2 days. So, and the news were in the New York Times, they were in Argentina, and then there was a cover-up, which usually creates a lot more strange information. A lot of that is actually mentioned in the book as blurbs. So I thought at some point, what will happen if a time machine will crash land in a mountain? You know, pieces will show up on Friday and other pieces will show up on Saturday. And that's how the time travel idea came. And I am always uncertain when I write about time travel, which fascinates me, what you will go back to change. And even if you knew what to change, that probably won't be the right thing. The character is confronted with the issue of not knowing what to do and in which way his actions, which can have far-long consequences, will affect the city, the society, and also someone makes the effort to time travel just to tell you that this is serious for the destinies of the human race. You should change something. And the whole endeavor of him, his whole adventure is that. Also, it gives the context to the book in which I compare to Quixote, that is that he doubts of his reality. He's in a quest. And that quest actually confronts him to a reality that doesn't seem to be possible.
Yeah, so and also part of the genius of the book and the idea of time travel is that certainly the past in Argentina, United States' involvement in the past in Argentina, as well as its own history, has plenty to make up for and plenty of places where things really went wrong and I think account for much of what's happening even today. Was that part of what you were thinking as when you added that element?
Yes, and I think that what happens is also the more I look into the history, I know the history, but I'm a scientist originally, but the reality is that there was so much going on. There were international conspiracies like what is called Operation Condor, where everyone that actually left Argentina was actually targeted by the military, will be chasing all the other countries in South America or the United States. And so they have a treaty to actually, so people escaped to Europe, escaped to Cuba, places that were not singled out by that Operation Condor. So it was a much more difficult time than I thought. And I was driven also by understanding the story of our extended family.
And also, you talked about this idea of Quixote, but in a way, there are two Quixotes and two Sanchos in Julian and in Edgar, right?
Yes, they are essentially each other's Sancho. The story focuses, it's told in first person, and it's focusing the story of Edgar. I thought that writing in the first person will give us the opportunity to make the reader doubt more. Is this real? Can you understand it as real or is not? Quixote is a book that in Latin America is read by many people. They say that when you are young, it makes you laugh. As you grow, it makes you think. And when you are old, it makes you cry. And I always wonder how it was possible that a book can have more than one story together. And I think it's that uncertainty about reality, that magical realism component, which right. makes the possibility of reading the book as different stories, as it is, or maybe as someone that is losing his mind, or maybe as a total truth, showing that there is essentially war going on in time where people are trying to fix the past for some maybe yeah. nefarious purposes.
And that uncertainty certainly has an emotional impact, but when you apply critical judgment to that, you realize that the stories we tell about our history, about our past, as we've just demonstrated in our last segment about our relationship with indigenous populations and how we've lied about that and somehow allows us to sleep, even though it's clearly a lie, that there are so many things that are actually happening simultaneously. To pack this into a single narrative and say that's our story is almost dangerous.
It's certainly true, and the more we go back, sometimes the less we understand because we have much more information. We're so used to think that just, you know, looking at Wikipedia or Google, we will learn something. It's not always true, and history is a much more organic and interactive process. If I learn something, it's not to trust just one source and actually look around. And in the period, I still haven't really finished learning about that period of Argentina, and people are still debating it. Argentina has created what they call spaces of memory, places that are preserved as they were and turned into museums and art exhibits. I visited recently one of them, which was a detention center in Buenos Aires.
J.D. Cortese is the author of the novel The Sound of a Broken Chain. Jorge, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You can find links to the book at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, which is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.